Ray Kurzweil is one of the world's leading inventors, thinkers, and futurists. He's been described as the restless genius and the ultimate thinking machine. And Kurzweil says that we are all on our way to becoming thinking machines. Literally. We're on the verge of a new era in evolution, the singularity, in which computers the size of blood cells will be implanted in our brains. The title of Kurzweil's new book says it all. It's called The Singularity Is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology. Kurzweil told Steve Paulson what we can look forward to.
We'll have nanobots, blood cell-sized devices that have powerful computers in them and communication devices. It'll all be on a wireless local area network. They'll be on the internet, and we can have billions of them in our brain. Today we have neural implants. In fact, some of them are programmable from outside the patient, like the FDA-approved Parkinson's implant. But these have to be surgically implanted. We'll be able to send them in without surgery, and not just to one spot in the brain, but to billions of locations, and have them interact with their biological neurons and really evolve into a hybrid of biological and non-biological intelligence by the late 2020s.
So what does that mean if we are, in a sense, hooked up to the internet just constantly, all the time, because we have this technology implanted in our brain? What changes at that point?
Well, some people feel we're already there, but we do have to interact with our computers, which for the most part are outside our bodies today, but they're going to make their way inside our clothing in a few years. I'm already working on one project like that, and ultimately inside our bodies. There are already early examples of this, but once we can build computers that are the size of blood cells in the early 2020s, they'll be interacting with our bodies and brains to vastly expand human intelligence. Now, one thing it's important to understand is that once the non-biological intelligence gets a foothold in our brains, and you could say we're at the early stages of that, where there's a dozen different neural implants, basically computers in people's brains that are surgically implanted today for diseases like Parkinson's. But once we're doing that on a wide scale, that non-biological portion of our intelligence will double in power every year, not because it's self-replicating, but just because that's the nature of what I call the law of accelerating returns. And that's been going on for a century and will continue. Our biological intelligence is basically fixed. By my calculations, we have 10 to the 26th power calculations per second among all the human brains in the world, and that'll be the same 50 years from now. But by the 2020s, we'll achieve the crossover point, and in 2030s, the non-biological portion of our intelligence will be much more powerful than the biological portion. And by the 2040s, I put the date for the singularity at 2045, because at that time, the non-biological portion of our intelligence, the intelligence of our civilization, will be a billion times more capable than the biological portion.
Now, when you talk about all of this intelligence, I mean, becoming millions or even billions of times more intelligent than what the biological brain is today, are you basically talking about the computational power of the brain? Or are you talking about all kinds of things? I mean, other kinds of neural capacities?
Okay, good question. If we talk about human intelligence and the human brain, and particularly human beings as we exist in our civilization with all our knowledge and skills, is the best example we have of an intelligent process. And we can identify both hardware, computational ability, and software, which is to say the methods, the principles by which we can recognize patterns or display emotional intelligence or solve analytical problems and so on. In order to achieve human levels of intelligence, so-called strong AI, strong artificial intelligence, we need both the hardware and the software.
So you're talking about computer artificial intelligence that shows love and happiness and all of those very human emotions.
That's right. All that takes place in our brain. Our emotional intelligence is not something sort of stuck on the side as a sideshow. It's actually the cutting edge of human intelligence. Being funny, being jealous, expressing a loving sentiment, these are very complex, sophisticated behaviors. It's actually the most intelligent thing that we do. But we will ultimately understand that. To come back to the hardware and software, we will have hardware platforms that are powerful enough to run human brain level processes if we can understand what those processes are. And that's actually pretty well accepted, that the hardware will be there actually by 2020. In fact, they'll be there in supercomputers by 2010. So the real key issue is, will we have the software? Because it's not my position that just having powerful enough computers, powerful enough hardware, will give us human-level intelligence. We need to understand the principles of operation of human intelligence, how the human brain performs these functions. What is the software? What is the algorithms? What is the content? And for that, we look to another grand project, which I label reverse engineering the human brain, understanding its methods. And we see the same exponential progress we see in other fields, like biology. I mean, the Genome Project, we doubled every year the amount of genetic data we sequenced. It took us 15 years to sequence HIV. We sequenced SARS in 31 days. And we're making similar exponential or accelerating progress in understanding the brain. The spatial resolution of brain scanners in 3D volume is doubling every year. The amount of data we're gathering on the brain is doubling every year.
Well, suppose this future comes to pass, what you've just laid out, and we're in the year 2050, and there are all of these super smart people roaming around. How does life change at that point, and what's different?
Well, it's going to go through several stages. We will go through a stage in the 2020s and 2030s where we are putting these intelligent nanobots in our bloodstream, which will keep us healthy from inside, augment our immune system, provide, you know, dramatic gains in human life expectancy, and then expand our mental functions. We'll still be human-like, but we'll have these mental prostheses. Now, some people might say that search engines are already a memory enhancement. I certainly use them. In fact, I may be on interviews, and I'm, you know, sitting there on my search engine and looking up facts in real time. And one woman said that her son's computer may as well be in his brain because he carries it around with him all the time. And so this will be getting more intimate. These devices will be inside our bodies and brains, expanding human capability. But over time, and because of this exponential growth, that non-biological portion of our intelligence will ultimately predominate. And we'll have human-level intelligence that doesn't have a physical body in real reality, but we'll be able to project bodies in virtual reality. We'll be spending more and more time in virtual reality. For example, if you want to go in virtual reality, the nanobots shut down the signals coming from your real senses, replace them with the signals that your brain would have been receiving had it been in the virtual environment. And to your brain, it feels like you're in that virtual environment. It can be just as realistic and compelling as real reality, incorporating all of the senses. You go to move your arm and your legs, but it moves your virtual body. So for your real body, your virtual body doesn't have to be the same body you have in real reality. Design of new virtual reality environments and new bodies to inhabit those environments will be a new art form. You can go there with one other special person or 100 people from anything from a conference to an intimate encounter and have these virtual experiences involving all of your senses.
Does the physical body become irrelevant? Does it become an anachronism?
Well, you know, we don't abandon old technologies immediately. People didn't throw their manual typewriters away when the first, you know, clumsy word processors appeared, but it's hard to find a mechanical typewriter today. We didn't throw our horse and buggies away when cars emerged. In fact, cars were pretty crude when they first emerged, and we tend to keep these old technologies around.
So the body, the human body, you're saying, will become an old technology going the way of the typewriter.
Eventually, we'll be able to create human body version 2.0 and 3.0, going beyond the limitations of biology, and also spending increasingly more time in virtual reality environments. And, you know, like any other technology, virtual reality at first will have some limitations, will be crude in certain ways, but eventually it'll be just as realistic and compelling as real reality, but have the advantage that you can choose from a million virtual reality environments, and some of which would be fantastic environments that, you know, couldn't exist in real reality. And you can have different bodies. You know, a couple could become each other to experience a relationship from the other's perspective, or a teacher could assign a student not just to dress up as Ben Franklin, but to be Ben Franklin in a virtual congressional congress. So there's applications for relationships, for education, certainly for entertainment.
Now, of course, a lot of people are appalled by this scenario. And part of what bothers them so much is it seems like you're redefining what it means to be human. And I'm wondering if you see it that way.
My definition of being human is we are the species that goes beyond our limitations. We didn't stay on the ground. We didn't even stay on the planet. We have not stayed with the limitations of our biology. When our genes were evolving, it was in the interest of the species for not that many people to live past child-rearing, which generally meant like age 28, because there were only limited resources, and those are best used by the young and those caring for them. In 1800, human life expectancy was 37. Mozart and Schubert died in the 30s, and that was typical. There was no sanitation, so people got bacterial infections. There were no antibiotics. There were no social safety nets. Human life was very hard in many ways. Thomas Hobbes described it well as short and brutish and disaster-prone. And so we've gone, you know, way beyond those limitations already. And that's the whole thrust of this notion of progress in science and technology. We're now mastering the information processes underlying biology and reprogramming biology. I mean, that's a long discussion, but I believe in 10 or 15 years, we will reprogram biology to overcome all the major diseases that kill 95% of us. You know, I've got a lot of examples of how that's happening, but we can turn genes off with RNA interference, for example, and that wasn't feasible a few years ago. And the progress starts out very slow, but then explodes as we begin sort of doubling these very large numbers. And it applies not just to computers, but to our understanding of our intelligence, our understanding of our biology. And ultimately, we can master those processes and go beyond their limitations. No other species does that. No other species has a knowledge base that they pass down from generation to generation. They may teach certain genetically prescribed skills to their young, but they don't have a knowledge base that itself evolves. Our knowledge base is doubling every year, and we need our technology to encompass it.
Ray Kurzweil is the author of The Singularity is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology. He spoke with Steve Paulson.